Chapter 65. 400 paces away, Aegon heard the explosion and whipped his head around, trying to locate its source. The Caladoran army was camped to the west, but none of those distant soldiers reacted as if the explosion had come from there. He looked at his captain.
"I'll send a runner to Lord Grayson," the captain said.
The queen had placed her little brother, Luke, in charge of the scouts, seeming to think that she had to give the young Cretan some responsibility, and thinking that it was one he couldn't possibly screw up. The 17-year-old had decided that all scouts would report only to him. Only after the scouts reported to him, sometimes waiting for an hour or more in line behind other scouts, were they able to go to the lords who needed to know. Combined with everything else, it made for a lot of swearing from Aegon's officers. None of them voiced their fears. There was no need. Every veteran knew that they were going into battle with a raw army. Calling it an army was, in fact, a stretch. The units hadn't trained together enough to act coherently. Different lords had different signals, and in the crush and cacophony of battle, voices frequently couldn't be distinguished. One officer wouldn't be able to give a hand signal to the officer down the line to relay the general's orders, or even to react to a new situation. That, with the Queen's positioning of units according to politics, made every veteran grit his teeth. Aegon was lucky to get even the 1,000 men he had. He only had them because Duke Logan Gyre had spent all his political capital asking it, and the men who had previously served under Aegon threatened mutiny if he didn't lead them. So Aegon had a tenth of the Cenarian army. The queen had given him the center of the line, though she pretended that that honor had gone to the lord stationed next to Aegon.
"Forget it," he said. "The battle will be over before we hear back from a scout. How are the men?"
"Ready, Lord Gen... My lord," the captain said.
Aegon looked at the lightening sky. It was going to be the kind of day a man should spend beside a fire with Utai, or brandy. Dark clouds obscured the rising sun, extending the darkness into the day and delaying the inevitable battle. The flat field, which was really a dozen farms together, was bare. The wheat harvest had been taken in, and the sheep moved to winter pastures. Low stone sheep fences crisscrossed the battlefield. It would be a messy, slippery, awkward place to fight. That was a mixed blessing. Between the fences and the mud, the Caladoran heavy cavalry would be cautious and slow, making a heavily armored horse carrying a heavily armored man jump over a fence into muddy ground was a good way to kill both. On the other hand, it would slow Aegon's men too, and that meant it would give the Caladoran witches more time to fling fire and lightning. Aegon drew his horse up before his foot soldiers and archers. He had no horsemen except for his Sakage guards and witch hunters. Having heard Logan speak last night, Aegon knew that if he were here now, Logan would have made these men see themselves as part of something vast and good. Logan would have given each of them a hero's heart. Under Logan, these men wouldn't hesitate a second to give their lives. Those who survived, even if they lived maimed for the balance of their lives, would count themselves blessed to have shared the field with the man. Aegon wasn't like that.
"I am a simple man,"
Aegon told the group lined up to face the horrors of magic and death,
"and I have only simple words to give you. Most of you have fought with me before, and it..."
Gods, were those tears? He blinked them away.
"It honors me that you would have me lead you again. This will be no easy fight. You know that. But we fight an evil that cannot be allowed to win. It is up to us to stop this evil, and today it is our only chance. Men, if we win, I will be stripped of command,
So if you do what I'm about to ask you, you may be punished, but I ask you regardless. Duke Jire has been given the honor of leading the first charge. The men rumbled at that. They knew what the Queen was hoping for. Aegon held up a hand. If he survives the first charge, I ask that you guard him with your lives. Aegon dared say no more. If they won, the Queen would doubtless hear of everything he'd said. His men were left sober and dutiful, ready. Aegon wished he were the kind of leader who left them cheering and fiery-eyed, but this, with these men, would do. He rode toward the conferring lords to get last-minute instructions, not that he intended to obey them. Aegon had thought long and hard about how to charge a force that included witches, and he thought he'd come up with a better strategy than any of these peacocks could. But it brought him close for the last time to Logan.
"My lord," Aegon said.
Logan smiled.
"General," he said.
He looked dashing in his family armor, though it had taken some alterations to make sure it didn't hang loose on his bony frame. Aegon struggled to find words.
"Sir," he said, "you will always be my king."
Logan put his hand on the general's shoulder and looked him in the eye. He said nothing, but his face told Aegon everything. Then, a Sethi woman on horseback emerged from the line. Aegon didn't recognize her. She was armored, wearing a sword and carrying a lance. "My lord," she said, addressing Logan, "Captain Caldrosa Wynn. We've arrived."
"What are you talking about?" Logan asked.
She raised a hand, and the ranks of men parted in curiosity as 30 women armored as Caldrosa was came through the ranks, each leading a horse. Not all of them were beautiful, and not all of them were young, but all of them were members of the Order of the Garter.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Logan asked.
"We're here to fight. Everyone wanted to come, but I limited it to women who have some experience fighting. We're pirates and merchant guards and pit fighters and archers.
And we're yours.
You have given us new lives, my lord. We won't let her throw yours away."
"Where did you get the arms?"
"The women who can't fight all helped,"
Captain Wynn said.
"And 30 horses?" "Mama Kay," Aegon guessed, scowling.
"Yes."
Mama Kay's voice rang out behind them. Thank the gods, at least she wasn't armed.
"Duke Jire, your steward found a few fine war horses that the Queen's auditors somehow overlooked. You'll find these ladies eager to accept any order that includes fighting."
"These women aren't..."
Logan stopped. He wasn't about to insult them. He lowered his voice.
"They'll be slaughtered."
"Mama Kay didn't ask us to do this," Caldrosa Wynn said. "She told us we were fools, but we wouldn't be swayed."
"Sir,
yesterday you took away our shame. You gave us honor. It's fragile yet. Please don't take it away."
"What's going on here? What are these whores doing in front of my army?"
Tara Grayson shouted, reining her horse in viciously by Aegon.
"They're fighting for you," Aegon said, "and there's not a damn thing you can do about it."
"Oh, I can't, can I?"
Tara asked.
"No. Because of that."
Aegon pointed. In the first hazy light of dawn, the Caladoran army was advancing. As Kylar and Vi ascended from the Maw into Castle Sanaria, the hot stink in the air faded, and even the taint of Kali seemed to hang less heavily. He'd walked these halls just 4 months ago,
taken some of the same passageways on his way to kill Roth or Sul. This time, however, he used a different strategy. By now, the Caladorans would know all the castle's secrets, the back passages and false walls, the spy holes and hidden doors. This time, there would be no taking the tunnels right into the throne room. But this far from the throne room and the king's chambers, the tunnels were safer for Vi, who couldn't become invisible. So an hour before dawn, they entered the passages and moved silently over the heads and behind the backs of scores of soldiers. Kylar didn't think they could have any idea he was coming, so he hoped their presence only meant that with a battle looming, Garrath or Sul wanted more security. The sheer numbers of soldiers worried him. With a battle coming, an ordinary commander would have a skeleton crew at the castle. The king's chambers were in the west wing. Kylar and Vi left the tunnels in an empty servant's room at the base of the last flight of steps before the king's apartments. Kylar poked his head out into the hall. The door to the king's bedchamber was at the end of a long, wide hallway. Two Highlanders with spears stood guarding the door. Other than the numerous doors to servants' rooms that lined the hall offered no cover. Again, Kylar thought, not a problem for him, but a serious problem for Vi. Maybe he shouldn't have brought her along. Mama Kay thought he would need her, but it was starting to look like she'd just slow him down. He was going to have to take down both guards by himself. It was possible, but each man had a bell rope to sound an alarm. Kylar had no doubt he could kill them both, but killing both and getting them away from their ropes? Stepping back into the room, Kylar said, "Why don't you wait here until they're..." Vi was topless, unfolding a dress she'd taken from her pack. Kylar gaped, frozen. When his eyes finally lifted, Vi's expression was perfectly casual. He turned his head, blushing. A pack hit him in the stomach. "Grab the bodice, would you?" Vi said. He pulled the bodice out of the pack and handed it to her as she wriggled into a tight serving woman's dress. She leaned over and pulled up the legs of her pants so they wouldn't show under the dress, again giving Kylar an eyeful. He coughed. She grabbed the bodice from his nerveless fingers. "Seriously, Kylar, stop acting like such a virgin." Virgin? How he absolutely loathed the word. "I'm sure it's not the first time you've seen a woman naked." Actually, it was. But Kylar would have died, for real, before he admitted it to Vi. Eline had never let him see her breasts, though she hadn't always stopped his hands from straying into that golden territory. She'd always wanted to save everything she could for when they were really married, and if Kylar had eroded those boundaries somewhat, bastard, every step seemed huge, a precious gift. It had been vastly frustrating then, but as Vi laced the bodice rapidly and adjusted the amount of cleavage, it was different. For Vi, showing her breasts was nothing. She didn't even turn as she grabbed each breast within the bodice and pulled it this way and that to show it to best advantage. Kylar had thought that Eileen's were the ultimate of all breasts, but Vi's breasts were fuller, larger. You couldn't look at her and not notice her breasts. It automatically made her sexual. And yet, to her, they were just tits. Tools. Eline was less blatantly sexual. Maybe less sexual, period. But there was something cheap about Vi's sexuality. Something that told Kylar she took no joy from it. That had been taken from her. Taken by her mother's lecherous lovers, by Hugh Gibbet, by Mama Kay's clients and casual fucking. Kylar's emotions skittered from aroused to mournful.
Vi picked up a wicker laundry basket and stuffed it full of clothes, including her own tunic. Under the last tunic, she secreted a dagger.
How do I look?
The outfit did look oddly familiar. She'd shown substantially less cleavage that day, in keeping with the modesty of the Drake household. But they were exactly the same clothes Vi had worn when she tried to kill him.
Son of a bitch, he said.
She chuckled and turned, modeling for him.
Does it make my butt look big?
You get your big ass in the hall. She laughed and put the basket on her hip. She was provocative, gorgeous, tempting. And now she had to add fun to the mix? Damn it! He'd almost kissed her outside. No doubt he'd be wearing a knife in his back if he'd done it, but for a second, he'd even thought that she wanted him to. She sashayed down the hallway, and the Caladoran's eyes locked onto her. One of them muttered an oath.
Hello,
Vi said, coming to stand in front of the guard on the left.
I'm new here, and I was wondering if...
Her knife slashed so deeply across the man's neck, it almost decapitated him. Kylar broke the other man's neck with a sharp twist and a meaty crack. Vi looked over where he was, or wasn't, since he was invisible.
Unfucking believable, she said.
She cleaned the dagger and put it back in the basket.
Fine. You come in after 10 seconds or as soon as you hear my voice. If the God King wakes up, I'll distract him and you kill him. If he stays asleep, I'll take him.
She opened the door, slowly and silently, and stepped inside. A few moments later, she came out. Her face was green.
He's not there, she said.
What's wrong? Kylar tried to step past her, but she blocked him.
You don't want to go in there.
He pushed past her. The room was full of women. They stood frozen, like statues in various poses. One, on all fours, naked, supported a sheet of glass on her back, forming a table. Another, a tall noblewoman Kylar recognized but couldn't name, stood on tiptoe, stretching seductively, one arm and one leg wrapped around a post of the God King's massive four-poster bed. Shelline Lo-Gyre sat, legs crossed in her shift, in a wing-backed chair. Kylar didn't know anything about her except her reputation for a fiery temper. Her expression showed it, as did her disheveled hair and the tension in her lean muscles. Most of the women were naked, the rest wore little. Two, on their knees, held a wash basin. Two others held a mirror. One was manacled to the wall, a scarf around her neck. Kylar's breath stopped. It was Cira Drake. Like all of them, she wasn't as still as a statue. She was a statue. With a little cry, Kylar touched her face, touched the lips he'd once kissed. They were as yielding as living flesh, but cool, and there was no life in her open, shining eyes. Her flesh, all of the women's flesh, had been frozen in place with some magic, then left here, as art. Beneath the scarf, Kylar could see the bruises circling Sierra's neck. He looked away. There were two ways to die when hanged. If you fell far enough, your neck would break and you'd die quickly. Otherwise, you strangled slowly. Cira had died the hard way. He stepped away. But everywhere his eyes turned, he saw gruesome detail. The women wearing bracelets concealed gashed wrists. Chemises concealed pierced hearts. Those wearing more clothing did so to conceal the imperfections of their taxidermy. They were the ones who'd thrown themselves from their balconies and now had bulges, where no bulges belonged. Kylar staggered like a drunk man. He needed air. He was going to throw up. He burst out onto the God King's wide balcony. She sat on the stone railing, feet hooked through the posts for balance, leaning far back, naked, a nightgown in her hand, fluttering in the wind like a flag. Mags! Kylar screamed. Talent leaked through his fury, and the scream reverberated over the castle, echoing back from the courtyard far below. All life in the castle stopped. Kylar didn't notice, nor did he notice the Kakari rushing over his skin, the face of judgment covering his anguish. He hammered a palm down on the stone railing and crushed it on one side of Mags, then again on her other side. Then he lifted her and carried her back inside. The feeling of her skin, so like living skin, was obscene. But her limbs were locked in place. He laid her on the bed, then tore the bolts, holding Sera Drake to the wall. He laid Sera beside her sister. As he covered them, he saw that each girl's left foot was signed in a bubbly script, as if their corpses were art. Trudana Jadwin. Vi was staring saucer-eyed from him to the shattered 6-inch stone railing.
"Fucking fuck," she whispered. "Kylar, is that you?"
He nodded stiffly. He wanted to remove the mask of judgment, but he couldn't. He needed it right now.
"I checked the concubines' rooms," Vi said. "Nothing. We must already be in the throne room."
Kylar's stomach flipped. He jerked involuntarily.
"What?"
Vi asked. "Bad memories," Kylar said. "Fuck it, let's go." Dawn was coming. By killing the two guards, they'd tipped their own hourglass. Someone would check the men's post soon, probably at dawn. Worse, the Cenarian army's glass was already draining. The battle would begin soon, and then the nasty surprises would start. If Logan were to have a chance to be king, Kylar needed to hand him a victory. Killing Garoth or Sul would unman the Calidorans. They walked through the halls, brazenly. Vi in her serving girl uniform, and Kylar, invisible, but flitting from doorway to doorway, as if he weren't, in case any Meisters were wandering the halls. As they came to the last hallway, they passed 6 of the largest Highlanders Kylar had ever seen. Kylar dodged behind some statuary as he saw that the Highlanders were accompanied by 2 Verdmeisters. Most curious of all, the protection seemed to be for one woman, apparently one of the God King's concubines, or wives, all wrapped up in robes and veils so that not an inch of her skin showed. When Kylar drew his knives to kill them, Vi laid a hand on his arm. He turned Judgment's eye on her, and she flinched, but she was right. A fight here was a distraction that might jeopardize the real mission, and there was nothing that was going to stop Kylar from killing Garoth or Sul. Kylar's stomach was a riot. It didn't quiet, even when the group rounded a corner and disappeared. This was the same hallway he'd stood in with Eline and Uli when he'd gone to his first death. He calmed. Garoth or Sul was far more powerful than Roth or Sul, but Kylar was more powerful now, too. He was more confident. He'd been a boy trying to prove he was a man then. Now he was a man making a choice, knowing what it might cost. He smiled recklessly. "So, Vi, you ready to kill a god?"